Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And this week, we're taking a slight break from our normal setup, away from the deep dive, as we click ourselves into preview mode. Because, in case you haven't heard, which is probably very, very unlikely, this weekend is all set up for an absolute humdinger. Liverpool against Manchester City. The 2021 Premier League champions up against the 2020 champions. The 2019 European champions against the 2021 finalists. Subplots all over the place. Klopp versus Pep. It's all set to go down this Sunday at Anfield. Right then. And with all eyes on Merseyside, we will be breaking down the game, the key numbers, the key figures, the key battles, both on and off the pitch, as things get started at Anfield. And we'll be asking the question, or looking to find the answer, for the big, big conundrum. What happens when the best attack in English football meets its most stubborn defensive opponent? Right then, plenty to get through. My name is Fergal Brennan, and joining me today, we have our very own Squawker genius, Squawker's football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you for calling me a genius. That's very flattering. I don't know if I am a genius. I'm not S tier. I'd say a solid A tier, you know?
Okay, I think that's quite humble. I'm just very, very excited because this is such... I'm just throwing out genius and compliments and all sorts of stuff at the moment. And joining Mo...
I have an S tier beard, I'll say that.
Okay, well, there you go. We'll lead with that. Lead with your front foot forward. And alongside Mo, we have our other Mo, Liverpool fan and freelance football broadcaster, and also a bit of a genius. Come on, let's be free and easy with the compliments today. Mo Stewart. Mo, how are you doing?
I mean, I feel like you're kind of demeaning it there, but you're diluting the genius there. But aside from that, I'm doing very well. I'm looking forward to this weekend big time. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting game ahead of us.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Right, before we get into some of the numbers and some of the interesting little stats and battles and all the rest of it that's going to go on this weekend, or we hope goes on in the game this weekend, Mo, I just want to talk to you about this as a concept, as a derby. Liverpool, obviously, for decades and decades, have had an enormous rivalry with a different team from Manchester, Manchester United. Buried in history, the two cities have this massive rivalry between them, and that's been played out between Liverpool and Manchester United. Pep Guardiola comes into Manchester City, Jurgen Klopp comes into Liverpool, and the dynamic changes. 13 games between the two managers since taking over the respective clubs. And this has developed as a derby. So I wanted to get your take on this as a Liverpool fan. Obviously, the United derby still exists as a massive fixture within the calendar. Everton as well, in terms of an uber local angle. But Man City have become a rival, and the two sets of fans have built up a real fire between them in the last few seasons.
They have, it's true, although I do still feel like large proportions of that is manufactured. I think there's a longer period of time where we were on the same side, i.e. against their other lot, than we've been on different sides. And I think for most Liverpool fans, deep down, you can still kind of remember that. Obviously, there have been some very fierce and tense moments. Everyone remembers the Copperberg bottle. Everyone remembers some stupidly singing songs on the plane. And all of those things that kind of build the tension and the enmity. But when you boil it down to it, really, what it is it's two teams who know that if they can get the better of the other one, they've got a large chance to win this league. Because that's been the key factor amongst all of the things why we've concentrated on this game so much and why so much has happened in this game is because we've always known that we're the ones who can cause the other one trouble. If you look back to the beginning of Pep's time, in fact, even before Pep was down, when Klopp was around, we were the first team to give Man City trouble. When Man City were winning 100 points, it was Liverpool who gave them their first defeat in a game that no one who was at it will ever forget, the 4-3. And that's been it as well. I think some of the games have been so good and so action-packed and drama-filled that it's added to the layer, another layer to it. So in some ways, it's an organic rivalry in as much as there isn't what you call... I mean, I say there isn't a big bang moment. There kind of is, and that's Raheem Sterling. But the reality is, I think most Liverpool fans hated Sterling rather than hated Man City. But that definitely started the Man City games becoming more an event. And from that on, it's kind of built and built and built. But, I mean, the City fans probably won't like me saying this, but if in 10 years' time they're not challenging for titles again, I'm not sure we'll still hate them. I think we'll probably be fine.
Yeah, this is the thing, isn't it? It's a rivalry like the Liverpool-Chelsea, like Man United-Arsenal, where it's just born out of the two teams being the two best teams in the country. There, you're going for titles, so you're naturally, you develop an enmity, a rivalry there. But it's not Man United-Liverpool. Nothing can come close to that. Even Liverpool-Everton, even Manchester Derby, it's not the same. Man United-Liverpool is the El Clasico of England, right? It's the two biggest clubs in the country by a mile as well. This is the thing. You know, you can argue it this way or that, but who's bigger, who's whatever done this. But if not just on titles won, I mean, Ryan Giggs has as many titles as Arsenal, right? And he's third in the list. Man United, Liverpool, 20 and 19, you know, way ahead of everyone, right? Way ahead of everyone else. And just in terms of viewership and why are they always on the TV in the cup games? Because everyone watches those cup games, bro. When you put Man United, Liverpool on TV, everybody's watching them. Everybody. So and Chelsea are working their way up to that level. You have to say fair play to Chelsea, because it's what that is, it's just sustained success, isn't it? So sustained success for Man United, sustained success for Liverpool, obviously for a longer period. And now Chelsea have sustained success. So in 10, 15 years, Chelsea will have the same sort of stature if they keep winning things like this, obviously. They have to keep winning things. City are 10 years further back, you know? It's at least 10 years, and it's very hard. I mean, look, Pep's, we've said before, Pep's begging their fans to come to the ground. Like, you know, it's like, could you imagine Klopp ever having to beg anyone to come to Anfield, ever? Like, it wouldn't happen, right? So Liverpool are a different level, but the rivalry is footballing, right? It's footballing based.
Mm. No, I think what City's biggest problem is going to be is that they are kind of catching up. Like, I do know a lot of kids who are becoming City fans, who are buying City shirts. But the way the football in general is going, it's not really going to build a stronger bond with the club as much as it is with the star players. Because I'm sure we've talked about this on pretty much every show I've been on, that the players are becoming more popular than the teams. And that's something I think we're going to see. If you don't have that long historical connection, you're going to find that a lot of the teams will move on once their best favourite players move on or retire. So whether that they can build that into the kind of historical legacy that Liverpool and Man United have depended on, I'm not sure they can. And I feel like from the City's point of view, that's always going to be in the back of their mind. That's maybe why they are pushing this idea of a rivalry more than Liverpool are, because they want to feel like they've replaced Man United in our hearts and in our importance. They haven't.
No. I think Mo's kind of laughing to himself there because he knows that's also true from a United perspective. I want to move on to look at some of the numbers now, Mo. And obviously, as I mentioned in the intro, this idea of the best attack in the Premier League up against the best defence in the Premier League so far this season. And things couldn't really be tighter going into this game. Liverpool top of the pile, 14 points after six games, and City in second with 13 points from six games. And when you look at the numbers in terms of both teams and those key metrics of defence versus attack, Manchester City, lowest XG in terms of conceded so far this season, just 2.8. Fewest shots on target faced from anyone in the Premier League, just 6, which is incredible when you average that out at just 1 per game. And then you flip it the other side for Liverpool. From an attacking perspective, they've got the highest XG so far this season, 16.06. And they've made the most shots on target, 49 spread across 6 games, which is massively, massively impressive. When you look at the first 6 games of the season, City and Liverpool, has that been the tale of the tape from what you've seen so far, that Liverpool are just creating buckets of chances, scoring the majority of them, obviously coming unstuck in certain situations, and then City on the flip side, defensively so, so solid, both individually and collectively?
Yeah, absolutely. Liverpool, to me, and I said this, I think, in one of their earlier games in the season, I said Liverpool may not win like loads of stuff this season. They might not win anything, but they'll be great fun to watch. And because it looks like a return to the rock and roll football that Klopp got the team playing 17-18 when they made the Champions League final and should have won it, but for judo throw gate.
We can call it reasons.
Yeah, let's call it reasons. You know, and they're fantastically good fun to watch, but you can see very clear defensive issues, which Brentford, of course, exploited more than anyone. But everyone you could see has had a pop at them. And you're thinking, if you were a bit sharp with your finishing, or if Alisson wasn't such a gigantic man, you know, Liverpool might have. It's not the same, is it? Because Matip has always been vulnerable to movement, pacing behind. Van Dijk is nowhere near top speed, because he can't be, because he's spent a year out injured, half a year out injured. And so there've been vulnerabilities there, obviously, right? And but they've been so good to watch, so much fun, so much attacking flair. Mohamed Salah, we'll talk about him more later, but oh my God, what a player he's been this so far this season. Mane has been also incredible for different reasons. You know, we'll talk about the little bit, but then City have been just incredible as well. City, you watch City, you think, okay, I see why you wanted to pay 150 million for Harry Kane. Because you put Harry Kane in that team, they win every single game. And with this defensive solidity they have, and then you chuck Harry Kane in there to shoot and score goals, they win every single game. They'll be incredible. And it's so reductive almost. It feels reductive to say that, oh, City just needed a goal scorer to make everything click. But City just need a goal scorer to make everything click. But they don't have one. So what they can fall back on is their defence. Their defence is excellent. Really good against Chelsea. Their pressing was great. Against Southampton as well. Very, very good. Very solid defensively. They press well. They defend well when they have to defend. They look really, really good, but they just lack a goal scorer. And I just think over the long run, that's going to be a problem. And frankly, at Anfield, it might be a problem as well.
I just think that a lot of the time, we are going to be in a situation where both teams aren't going to be able to do everything that they want to do in this game. There's going to be times when they're going to have to yield. We just don't know how much each team is going to be forced to yield, because essentially both teams are going to try and do the same things. Both of them really do want to dominate the ball, but they have a plan in case they can't. They're going to have fast players who are going to be capable on the counter-attack in Liverpool's case, and they're going to be trying to win the ball higher the pitch in Man City's case. It really is a case of concentration and two strong teams hoping to find a weak spot. I do take issue with one thing, though. Liverpool's defence. Yes, against Brentford, they had a plan and they exposed us and it did not look very good. I would like to point out we had conceded one goal in the previous five Premier League games. So everyone is allowed an off day. And I believe that was it. So do I think that that's going to... The way that Brentford scored their goals, Man City are going to be capable or even willing to try? No, I don't. I think they have their own plan. I don't think it looks anything like Brentford's. And so from that perspective, you can almost disregard that result. So then you look at the others. You look at the Chelsea game. Chelsea scored from a set piece, a corner. Someone fell asleep. Again, concentration. That's going to be the key. You can have set piece situations, which I think Liverpool have an advantage over Man City over in general. But there are going to be other situations, set plays, where two teams are in their set. They're going to know what each other are trying to do. And it's just going to take a little bit of a crack here or a crack there to open, and then you'll find someone taking advantage.
Mo, I want to throw it back to you because we're going to talk about Liverpool first as home side. We'll give them home advantage. One of the key figures for Liverpool, not just in terms of performances, but the metrics that we measure performances and how they're expected to do in certain games is Trent Alexander-Arnold. Now, at the time of recording, we're relatively confident that he's probably not going to play. We expect James Milner to keep his place at right back. And when you look at everything Liverpool have done well, and arguably everything they've done badly so far this season, he is front row and centre. 42% of their attacks on goal have come down his side. But on the flip side of that, 44% of the attacks that they've conceded have also come down his side. So given the fact that the likelihood is City are probably going to be planning for Trent not playing, we can't know for absolute certainty, of course. Trent is going to be an absolute key figure, whether he plays or whether he doesn't play, because it affects both Liverpool and City in terms of how City will look to exploit what James Milner arguably lacks that Trent Alexander-Arnold has. But in terms of a defensive structure, James Milner gives you more of a stoic position. But Liverpool then will be lacking some impetus in terms of what they can do going forward.
It's interesting because there's kind of two ways to solve this problem if you're Liverpool. I think we've seen a bits of some of both of them against Porto. You see situations where sometimes instead of where Trent would normally be really high up the pitch, almost in the corn flag, you'll see Henderson putting himself in that position from wide midfield, and then you still have Salah just inside him, ready to come off into the action area. The problem with that is if you then lose the ball, you've got a central midfielder in the corner flag. And the difference between having Trent there, there's already a plan when it's Trent, and that plan involves Jordan Henderson or whoever's playing that right midfield. So if he's there, then you've got a problem. And yes, we do have Milner, but it's one of those situations where I believe it will be best suited if Milner does, as you say, drop back a little bit. He's still going to want to influence the game going forward, though. That will be the biggest mistake we make if we don't have anyone trying to influence the game, so they can focus all of their attention on Andy Robertson on the left side. Because I think that's what City's normal natural balance would be, to attack down Robertson's side. Because if you looked at the game against Chelsea, most of their attacks were going down that side. That they were going towards Alonso, because, you know, Alonso. But obviously with Liverpool, it appears to be a big disparity between Robertson and Milner. So it would tell you that they should look to overload on the other side. Whether they do that, whether they shift the focus of their own attack that much to try and isolate a supposed weakness, I don't know. I feel like this might be one of the few games where Pep doesn't try and overthink himself and he just goes with the team that would do the job best. We'll see.
Looking across the City, obviously we've talked about their defensive strength, Mo, and ironically we talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold, whether he plays, whether he doesn't play, whether it's going to be James Milner. That battle, that expected battle between Grealish and Trent, whether it happens or it doesn't happen, whether it's Grealish against Milner, is going to be definitive. Because when we look at it from an attacking perspective and where most of City's attacks come from, surprise, surprise, it's Jack Grealish's side. 42% of their attacks have come down that left channel that Grealish has arguably either short-term or medium-term made his own. And particularly when we look at chance creation and goals scored so far this season, all of the goals that Liverpool have conceded in the Premier League this season have come inside the 18-yard box. And all of the goals that Manchester City have scored, barring one set-piece goal, have been in the 18-yard box. So you've got this perfect storm of City are absolutely dying to get down their left-hand side, behind the opposition right-back, and get into the box to create a chance. And despite the fact, as Mo pointed out, the goals that Brentford scored are very Brentford-y, they're not necessarily going to be the types of chances that City will look to create. If the ball is in the box, City are very predatory, and Liverpool, based on the numbers, are relatively vulnerable.
Yeah, and this is the what it's going to define the Trent again. The Trent injury is just defines the game, because if Trent played. Right, there is a vulnerability behind Trent when he attacks, because he's so good in attack, you let him go and attack. And I know, and they bring Henderson over to cover, and Matip is there, but Matip is not great at doing that. And obviously, because Gomez isn't fully fit yet, and Konate isn't up to speed. So if they were in there, it'd be a lot more solid. And Henderson covers, and he does a good job covering, but he doesn't get it right every game. And we've been seeing a lot this season, Salah tracking back into the right back area to cover for Trent, because that's what, you know, he can do everything, apparently, this guy. So, you know, if Trent was playing, I'd almost say City have a better chance of getting at them down that flank with Cancelo, with Grealish. Grealish is going to be really hurting because he was rubbish against PSG, like genuinely just really bad. And he's going to want to put in a performance. And he's good. When he's motivated, he's very good. However, I think Milner almost makes it worse, because whereas I think Trent would play with Grealish, he would defend him, but then he'd try and attack and try and hurt him. Milner, I don't know, I'm not saying he won't try and attack or anything, but I think Milner is much more liable to just sort of, if Grealish has the ball, Milner's going to be back there defending, like saying, go on then, dribble past me, do your move. I know what you're going to do. I've seen you do it 100 times. I'm just going to kick you when you do it. And with the rules on tackling being what they are in the Premier League, he'll probably get away with it. I'm not saying he's going to foul him all the time, but he's just hit him very hard. Get the ball, go for the ball, hit him hard. If you foul him, the ref's probably going to let you get away with it if you go for the ball, honestly. And then what? Then he's going to roll around the floor going like, what are you doing, ref? Give me a free. He's going to get discouraged. It's going to throw him off his game. So I think almost in a way, defensively, obviously offensively, it's going to be a huge miss if Trent doesn't play. But defensively, I think almost in a weird way, it works out a bit better for Liverpool. But the problem is, of course, is that everything is interlinked. So what affects your attack affects your defence as well. So much as we say defensively, it's going to help Liverpool, sure, in theory. But of course, if it throws off their attack, well, as much as it might be able to, that's going to then filter back into their defence. And then, like Mo says, we might see Andy Robertson come under a bit of pressure from Mahrez or from whoever. Like De Bruyne loves to flank out that side, doesn't he? So there's a lot of possibility, and it all hinges on City being able to get the ball at, get at the Liverpool fullbacks, right? Because once you can drag Van Dijk when he and Matic, when they're in position in the middle of the box, are very hard to shift. If City start resorting to whacking crosses in, right? Let's say they fall behind and they start to panic because like hitting crosses in, they've lost the game. Liverpool aren't going to let them score from across. Not then. Like if they had a striker, number nine, if they had Ivan Toney in there to disrupt them, maybe you could argue, okay, fine. So it's going to be interesting to see what exactly City managed to do to break Liverpool down, if they attack the wide areas. Because if they do, if they can move Liverpool players around and then do their famous cutbacks, they might be able to get some magic going. But a lot of it depends on who the other winger is, I think, because and who plays as the false nine. Because obviously City, it's a proper carousel out there. Grealish, we'd assume, would start. But is it, you know, does Sterling play? You know, he wasn't very good against PSG either, but he's very good at those tap-ins. Does Foden play? Foden is electric, pure electric. But do you almost want him coming off the bench? Mahrez seems like a no-brainer to go against Robertson because he'll defend him and attack. But then do you play Ferran Torres as number false nine? A lot of it is going to depend on who Pep puts up there because that would inform how they play. But what's really important for City is that they try and go at the Liverpool fullbacks, even if it presents dangers defensively.
I think for me, in terms of the start going backwards, so with City forward line, I'm expecting Grealish to play. I do expect it to be Foden and Jesus as well, doing their bit where they basically share both roles, both of them intertwined. Because I think the real key to what City want to do is going to be movement. If they can flood areas so Liverpool players don't know who the ball's going to, who's the most important man to track, who's got which man, that's really going to be where they're going to get their joy. Because we've seen it in the last two games when Milner's played up against Wilfried Zaha and Luis Diaz for Porto. They tried to get tricky wingers up against him one-on-one. They tried to embarrass him with pace and trickery. It didn't work. It's not how you beat James Milner when he's playing fullback. How you beat James Milner when he's playing fullback, and I should probably say it's quietly, is overloading him, giving him too much to do. Yeah. Because that's when you start to have other players, like you say, the Matip will start to cover over area. And then you couple that with guys arriving late. And that was why Gundogan was so devastating at Anfield last season. Yeah. Because he has that innate knack of knowing when a defence has sagged to then come in and attack. It's something that Diogo Jota does very well for Liverpool as well. But that's going to be the key. If they really want to isolate Milner, they need to keep their front five, their flat front five, as they like to do it when they've got the ball. Just make sure there's always movement around those players. Keep everybody on their toes, because that's when, as I say, Liverpool players will have to come over, will be drawn out, and that's where they can find their space. Liverpool are going to be trying to avoid that as much as possible. For that reason, despite the recent form of the boy wonder Curtis Jones, I am expecting to see Naby Keita play, because it looks like he is fit again. And I just think in terms of discipline, in terms of being able to shut down spaces, but also have the energy to be able to go and affect the ball at the other end, I think he's going to get the nod in that place.
Do you not think, though, that Jones... How do I say this? Jones is exactly the kind of player that does in Pep Guardiola sides.
Yes.
It's not that he's great. I mean, he is great, yes, obviously. But it's just his mentality, his bloody-mindedness to, like, I'm going to do this now. You can tackle me if you want. You're going to have to tackle me. You got to kill me to stop me, sort of thing. Like, I'm going to go and do this now. You want to stop me? Stop me. But I'm going to do it. He has this sort of drive, the Gerrard-esque. And I know that's a big word to use to Liverpool, but it's the way he just drives forward and just does things and step over, shot from distance. He'll try it. If it's there, he'll take it. And I think, to me, that... I mean, I agree. I think Naby Keita is very responsible. But to me, Curtis Jones is exactly the kind of player you play against the Guardiola side. Because if there's a little gap there, if someone misses a marking assignment, he'll be in that gap. And he'll be like, right, I'm going to shoot from 30 yards. I don't care. And it might just go in, because with Edison, you never know.
If he plays, I'll be excited because of all of those reasons. I personally think that he's going to have a role to play in this game. I think it might be that Klopp's going to say, look, rather than expect you to be able to keep your discipline for 90 minutes and still effects going forward, give me 25. I'm going to start with Naby and Henderson and Fabinho. And we're going to start because City are one of those few teams that make Liverpool think about what they do naturally. And again, it's the same with Man City. That's why this is such a great game. The difference between the Man City and Chelsea game is that Chelsea were more than willing to go into their defensive set at home and just play counter-attack football. Liverpool don't really do that. Liverpool will always still try to play forward, play progressive, try to cause the opponent's problems at their own end. And so,
especially at Anfield.
Especially at Anfield, especially with the
crowd. First 20 minutes is going to be a hurricane.
We have seen Manchester City fall to that hurricane on countless occasions. And I can tell you, every single Liverpool fan inside Anfield will be blowing a gale. It's going to be what they call a three-pint minimum game. So that pressure is going to be on from everywhere. They're going to need a team that's going to be able to go out and press. The pressing battle is going to be key. That's the way City are able to be so good at defensive and concede so few shots because no one gets the ball anywhere near their goal. They win it back before you get there. And they always have been so good at that. But the difference is that if you get beyond that as a team and you've got players who are quick and decisive on the counter-attack, then you can cause them problems. We saw it with PSG last night. We've seen it with Leicester City giving them trouble down the years. We've got a few players who can do that. So I think that once the game gets a bit stretched towards the second half, that's the battle you're going to see. When players aren't able to keep up that press as often, who's going to come out on top?
Yeah, and I'd throw my hat in on James Milner. I think given the fact that there's going to be so much focus on whether he's expected to play or not and the whole issue with Trent Alexander-Arnold and his injury, I agree with Mo completely. This idea that you can run James Milner, you can do him for pace, he's the fittest man on the planet. So no, that's just not going to happen. This thing that clever movement that you can trick him with a step over or a feint, no, he's seen everything before. He's been playing Premier League football for 750 years. None of that is going to fool him. And if you do overload him, if you try and pack Foden and Grealish into a small little square of the pitch, the first time that happens and there's a bit of danger, he will be barking at Joel Matip to get over and give him a hand and barking at captain Jordan Henderson to get back and do his job. So I'm fully throwing my hat in that Milner up against Grealish, up against Foden. We've seen it before. Milner takes on all comers and generally he comes out on top. So all power to James Milner. Right, from players who are possibly, probably going to play to players that we're almost certain are definitely going to play, pick one from both sides because what I want to look at here is the changes from last season into this season and some of the reasons that City have become so effective defensively and Liverpool have stepped up another gear in attack. So, Mo, we're going to go with Liverpool first. And the name that jumps out is Diogo Jota. When Liverpool won the Premier League, you didn't have to look at the team sheet. It was Mo Salah, Sadio Mane and Roberto Firmino, game after game after game after game after game. You could have your match report written already. Diogo Jota comes in from Wolves and things change. Classic Klopp, he was eased into the team. He had to meet Klopp's standards of fitness and endurance before he commanded a regular place. Just 12 starts last season. At the back end of last season, he started to become more of a regular. He's now usurped Roberto Firmino in that front three alongside Salah and Mane. And you look at his stats from this season, not just goals, distance covered, touches inside the box, touches inside the final third. He's challenging both Salah and Mane for that role. 3 Premier League goals as well so far this season. He is going to start. Roberto Firmino will be on the bench. What has Jota done to not only force his way into this team, but essentially inject some life back into it? Because as dominant as they were, there was this sense that either Firmino or the system was going a little bit stale. Jota comes in and Liverpool are revived.
I think with all due respect to Bobby, it was more of the former than the latter. I think he wasn't able to give as much as he was able to previously. And that's just over time. I mean, I think we've heard it mentioned previously that Liverpool's front three have been together as a strike force longer than most attacks you can think of in Premier League history. It's been nearly 5 years they've been together. So in that time, everybody and his dog have thought of new plans, new ideas, ways to deal with it. And you are going to get wear and tear over a course of a career. So he hadn't been as sharp. Jota comes in and he's a scoring machine. He's absolutely lethal in those areas. And as much as we talk about the system with Bobby, it was those misses last season that were the point where people were looking at each other and saying, is it really time to look at a different option? Is he really still the best for us in this position? The reason why Klopp was still reluctant at that point is because Jota hadn't got up to speed with some of the Bobby stuff. Now, he's still not quite as comfortable in it. Like, he can find space. He's really good at finding space between the lines. But when he comes short to receive the ball, he kind of tends to come a little bit too far. He doesn't really like getting it on the half turn in between the defenders. He likes to try and ghost in, maybe do an overlap, maybe allow the ball to go somewhere else. So it's certainly different, just a little bit different the way we play. So with Bobby having that little bit extra bit of bravery to be able to take the ball on the half turn and go at defenders as opposed to coming beyond the midfield line, it means that you have a lot more chance of sustaining attacks. But what Jota has done really well is he's linked up down the left with Robertson and Mane. So he will, where Bobby will come short, he will kind of drag over to the left and has the same effect in terms of Salah having this big hole for him to come and run into. Because essentially that's what we're trying to do. But I think the goals have been what gave Jota the advantage as once he'd got up to speed with the system. The interesting thing about now this season is that the goals have kind of dried up a little bit. I mean, he's got 2 goals this season, but that's from what? I think 11 shots, which when you consider how he was last season, it was very automatic. He's still deadly in the air. If you give him a sniff in and around the penalty box, those 2 City central defenders are going to have to keep an eye on him. And I think he still offers more. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Firmino in this game. I really wouldn't.
Bold shout that. Mo, we're going to look at City in terms of their defensive record. Jota will be looking to get a goal. Firmino, whether he starts or he comes off the bench, will also be looking to get himself on the score sheet. But they're coming up against an absolutely formidable Manchester City defence. They've only conceded 1 Premier League goal so far this season. That was against Spurs on the opening day. And the key change that they've made in terms of a defensive lineup: Kyle Walker and Yao Cancelo are set at right back and left back. Ruben Diaz, obviously on the back of winning personal awards and the Premier League title last season, is rock solid at centre half. But he's got himself a new / old partner, because Aymeric Laporte is back in favour. John Stones had a bit of a renaissance last season as City won the title, got himself back in the team, got himself back to top form, and obviously right back in form for England for Euro 2020. But he hasn't featured in the Premier League so far this season. Aymeric Laporte is Pep Guardiola's preferred choice. 4 Premier League starts from 6 games so far this season. Nathan Ake is arguably edged ahead of Stones in that race to partner Diaz. And with Laporte coming back in, despite City being very, very impressive last season, they're actually better defensively with Diaz and Laporte. We talked about shots conceded. We talked about opposition touches in the box. They've got the best record in the Premier League so far this season. What has Laporte done that maybe Stones didn't do that has changed Pep's mind and taken City onto another level of defensive solidity?
I mean, it sounds reductive, but he's just a better defender than John Stones. it's that simple. Ultimately, it is that simple, in that he is just better than John. With all due respect to John Stones, who I like very much and who I think has a very, very interesting habit of playing very, very good in the year of international tournaments. Did it in 17-18, was amazing when they won the title. Did it in 2021, was amazing and went into the Euros in great form. So look out for him next year. That's my hot tip for the World Cup. But look, he's good. He's very good. But Laporte is better. He's stronger. He's more solid in duels. He's more solid in the air. He's not as quick maybe as Stones. But also what he is left-footed. Now, you said Ake's moved ahead of Stones, right? Which, that is a bit more ridiculous, right? Because Ake is not the greatest defender. He's not bad, but he's not the greatest defender. But what we had last season was Ruben Dias was Player of the Year. And what was so impressive about him winning Player of the Year was how good he was. Kept changing sides. He would play right side centre back with Laporte, and then play left with Stones. Now, ordinarily, you never move your best defender, right? Your defensive leader. He plays one place, and everyone else moves around him. Van Dijk, left centre back, always left centre back, right? Harry Maguire, left centre back. Rafael Varane, right centre back. By the way, Man United's problems against the Champions League last night was because they moved Rafael Varane to left centre back. Very, very big no-no. Don't do that. Don't move your best defender. And so City did that last season repeatedly and got away with it. But this season, I think almost Pep's figured out, okay, for it helps in multiple things, but especially in the build-up, when you're a passing team, you're playing the passing lead, you want left foot on the left, right foot on the right, because it helps you build the bring the ball out from the back. Your players are moving the ball onto their strongest foot and able to play passes down the line that can bisect lines of defence, bisect your attackers. If it's Ruben Dias on left, he's having to cut inside onto his right foot every time if he wants to make a pass, a really accurate, quick pass, and that's not what you want. Laporte and Ake as well, this is why he's playing more now, can just make that pass a lot easier. The ball comes to them, they can let it run across their body, open up, they can see the whole pitch ahead of them and just lift a beautiful body, whereas lift a beautiful pass out. Whereas Ruben Dias has to take the touch, cut back on himself, and then that extra like 2 seconds or second that it takes, someone's pressing you, that gives them time to come and get you. Just the extra 2 seconds, it makes it harder to let the ball come out. It gives you an advantage in some situations, like maybe when you're defending a player cutting on his strong foot. Maybe that gives you an edge there. But more or less, by and large, when you're a very pass-heavy attack, you want the ability to move left. Like Van Dijk is a great example of, in a team that is not a pass-heavy team, Liverpool, they pass the ball, they dominate the ball, but they do it differently. They don't want to ping the ball out from the back all the time. So it doesn't matter that Van Dijk is right-footed playing on the left, because it's not as quick or as immediate as it is with Liverpool. Plus, frankly, he plays on left all the time. I know you say he's adapting his game and his skill set to playing out there regardless. So Laporte is better defender than John Stones and is left-footed, so it gives the passing game much more symmetry out of the back. And as we've established, passing is how City defend. It's their best way of defending, not actually defending. And third thing is he lets Ruben Dias play one side of the pitch and that's it. Like, I'm sure if Ruben Dias drops out of a game for whatever reason, we'll see John Stones come in and play right centre back. And then Pep will maintain that right-left balance, right? And I think what's happened to John Stones is Pep has obviously seems to have decided on this right-left balance, and that just dooms him to sit behind Ruben Dias because he's not as good as Ruben Dias either. And also the other thing is Ruben Dias's communication is legendary. Like we did an interview with Jose Font a while back, and he was saying how, along with Van Dijk, Jose Font, by the way, is the grandmaster mentor for centre-backs. Like, if you want a centre-back to be great, send him to play with Jose Font for a couple of years. Van Dijk did it. Ruben Dias did it. I mean, that's... forget anyone else. And Pepe did it.
Sven Botman's doing it now.
Sven Botman's doing it now. Like, you want a centre-back, you know, world-class centre-back, send him to play with Jose Font for a couple of years. That man teaches and things, man. And communication is the main thing. He always goes on about how communication... all the best centre-backs are great communicators. Rio Ferdinand says this a lot as well in his punditry for VT. He's always saying how him and Vidic... what was great about them was that their communication, especially, and obviously he was a great communicator, Rio. John Terry, we've all seen videos of him shouting certain things on the pitch, but he shouted good things on the pitch as well at players, and he was a very good communicator. Communication is key. Ruben Dias is a great communicator. John Stones, I don't think, is. And even Laporte, I don't think, is a great communicator necessarily. He's a great individual defender, but the reason why Ruben Dias transformed City's defence and Laporte wasn't able to... and Stones wasn't able to, is because Ruben Dias communicates and he's talking all the time, telling everyone where to stand, telling everyone where to be. The same way Van Dijk is for Liverpool, right? It's the same thing. I'm not saying he's better than Van Dijk. I'm just saying it's the same communication and excellent physical robustness. And it just, yeah. So now you've got Van Dijk. You've got Ruben Dias on the right, communicating all the time. He knows where he's standing. He knows where he's got to be. John Stones, remember, by the way, he was responsible for the goal they conceded in the Champions League final because he ran over to make a tackle and then didn't make the tackle and dragged his whole defence out of shape. You don't do that. That's a no-no. You stay in your position. You don't drag your whole defence out of shape. And he did. Ruben Dias wouldn't make that mistake. That, you know, he wouldn't leave his position like that.
I feel like you kind of hit on something else as well. That ability to not make that mistake, to not lose concentration, to be able to keep to the plan, to know what to do in all situations. Stones still hasn't mastered that. He'll have periods where he makes less mistakes, but I still don't think he can go game after game, week after week, season after season without giving you something. And without being someone who an opponent game plans for. And if you're Pep, then that's always going to be the tiebreaker when you're trying to work out, is it worth me swapping this defender to that side just to accommodate someone, or should I play Stones? They're going to end up swapping.
Yeah, I think whichever way it's going to go down, it looks like a game of almost 4D chess. And Pep and Klopp, we know that they have had these fantastic battles in the past. It's going to be a hell of a game. We're going to take a very, very, very quick break. Let the guys gather their notes, because after the break, it is predictions time. We're going to be getting the score prediction. We're going to be getting some slightly left field shouts of how the two guys think the game is going to go down. And ultimately, asking the question of where they think Liverpool and Manchester City are going to end this season. We'll be back in a second. Right, we're back, and it is predictions time for Liverpool against Manchester City. This is what we've been building to. We've done the analysis, we've done the data, the hard numbers, but what we really want to know is how it's going to go down at Anfield. Before we get into score predictions, we're going to go for something a little bit more off the cuff. So Mo, I'm going to throw this over to you first. Give us your unique Squawker Talker prediction on something that's going to happen in this game. Not necessarily a scoreline, we'll come to that in a sec. Something that you are convinced is going to happen in this game. Take it away.
Okay, I think James Milner is going to foul Jack Grealish at least four times, possibly even more. I just think, and I don't mean that tackle him. He's going to tackle him a bunch too as well, and maybe Grealish will even beat him a couple of times as well. But I mean, literally four fouls will be given because Milner's going to kick the life out of him. And again, I'm not saying he's going to stud him or do him dirty. It's just going to be very, 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 very hard tackles. Because he's going to be like, okay, Jack, you're going to be, Jack will be there doing his fancy moves. And Milner is not a complicated man. He's a very intelligent man, very quality player. He's not a complicated player. He's just going to hit him. He's going to get the ball and just go right through the ball, right through him and be like, all right, get up, son. You know, he'll even give me the old get up, probably the old Sergio Ramos, get up, you know, afterwards. Or maybe he'll do the old, oh, didn't touch him, go. Four fouls will be given though, four fouls. I don't know. There might be many, many more fouls that aren't given, but four will be given, I think. That's my left field prediction.
Okay, Mo, are you going for something as violent or less violent than Milner looking to kick lumps out of Jack Grealish?
How do you define violence, mate?
I mean, maybe. I mean, like, first of all, one thing I will say that will definitely help Mo's bet, James Milner gets more leeway from Premier League referees than any other Liverpool player, maybe even any other Premier League player. They all love him. So, yes, he's going to get a chance to kick Jack Grealish four times. Most people would only get a chance for one or two. So, yeah, I'm definitely lumping on that. Mine may contain violence. I'm saying there's definitely going to be at least one penalty in this game. Now, if you look at last season, both teams got a penalty in both games. Four penalties. City missed both theirs. Liverpool scored both theirs, by the way. Obviously, that's the kind of high trend that probably isn't going to continue. But we have seen, as Mo mentioned before, City score all their goals in the box. Liverpool have been a little bit, maybe, we have conceded a lot of penalties over the course of the last couple of seasons. So I think of Fabinho against Sheffield United in particular. And it's something where you're going to see both teams have attacking players who are going to be running at people. And both defences, if Kyle Walker plays, he gave away a pretty dumb penalty against Mane last season at the Etihad. He has that in him still.
Yeah.
So I think that there may not be a penalty for both sides, but there's definitely going to be at least one.
Okay, fair enough. My suggestion doesn't involve physical violence. It involves emotional violence, which is a bit of heartbreak for the home side surrounding a late goal for Manchester City. We're expecting Liverpool to go out all guns blazing. We know how Klopp sets up, particularly at Anfield. But Pep tends to have a sting in the tail when it comes to facing Liverpool at Anfield. So far this season, City have scored 11 Premier League goals. Seven of them have come in the second half. And when you extrapolate that to Pep at Anfield, the numbers get even more interesting. Man City have scored 9 Premier League goals at Anfield with Pep Guardiola as manager. 8 of them have come in the second half, with the bulk of them coming in the last 15 or 20 minutes. So that is my tip, that Manchester City, win, lose or draw, will be getting themselves a late goal, because when it comes to Anfield and it comes to Klopp, Pep does not give up. Right, score predictions. We've given you slightly bit more leeway in terms of some daft Grealish getting beaten up by Milner nonsense. Mo, we'll go back to you to start off again. Score prediction. Games between these two teams generally involve quite a few goals. How do you think this is going to go down in terms of scoreline?
I mean, I'm going to go for a Squawker classic, which is a 2-2, as Jay Kentwistle once properly says, the Squawker classic. I think it's going to be, I think Liverpool will hit City early, as they always do. They'll come flying out of the blocks, and I think they'll get a goal in that time. I do genuinely think that. I think City have been very good so far this season, but again, Liverpool at Anfield, it's completely different to anything else in the Premier League. Especially in that 20, maybe the whole game, not so much, but in the 20 minutes at the start of each half, it's incredible. It's relentless. It's like nothing else in the Premier League. So I think they'll catch City. They'll get a goal. Maybe that'll be the fabled penalty. I don't know. Maybe it'll be Salah. We haven't talked about Salah, by the way. What a flipping player he is. What form he's in. I demanded prior to this podcast a 5-minute block to talk about him. We didn't get it, but I'll say for 5 seconds, Mohamed Salah is amazing. One of the best, probably the best player in the Premier League right now. Just sensational. What a player. A pleasure to watch him. And I think he'll probably score the first goal. But I think City will come back. City will dominate the game. City will play very well. They'll get a goal. Maybe they'll even get two. But I just think Liverpool, again, City keep going. Liverpool keep going as well. I think Liverpool will pull it all out. And it'll end even Steven, as it were. All square. And then we'll keep going with the league title, I guess. You know, Liverpool will still be 1 point ahead, but then the big game will be out of the way for City, so...
Okay, good shout. A 2-2 draw would be breaking new ground for Pep at City and Klopp at Liverpool. There's never been a 2-2 between them. Mo, are you going to go for a groundbreaking result in this one at Anfield?
It sounds 2-2 sounds kind of right, really. Like, if I was someone who was a neutral, that's what I'd be saying. But I still think Liverpool will win, because I've seen us do it to City in this situation so many times when we've been good and when they've been good. And I think we will still have enough. I 100% think City will score. I wonder how many of those late goals were actually consolation goals, because I know at least 4 of them were, because I was at those games. but I think that Liverpool will still find a way. I think that we will make a fast start. It might be more 3-2 than one of the 3-1s that we've seen previously, but I do think City will score. I think they're that good to score. It might be 2-1, it might be 3-2, but Liverpool by 1 goal.
Fair enough. Do you know what? Right up until the last minute, I was going for a draw. But Mo, just like James Milner, you've sweet-talked me around, so I'm going to go for a Liverpool win as well. I'm going to go 2-1. I think the pattern of the game will go like that. Liverpool will fly out the traps. I'm going for Liverpool to score first, City to score in the second half. But as you say, it could already be 2-0 by then, and it could be a consolation. But City will go hell for leather late on. But I think on the back of that PSG result, I just think there's been a little bit of a shine taken off the diamond in the last few days. And Liverpool, whilst they weren't given the toughest examination at Porto, they are full of confidence and that front three are flying. Right, before we wrap up, Mo, we're going to look at the longer picture, the season as a whole. Going into this game, Liverpool top of the table, Manchester City in second. Across the course of the whole season, in terms of where they're going to end up, these two are definitely going to be in the title race. But when it comes to the crunch in May, where are these two teams going to finish?
I still think we'll finish above them. I still think that will probably be enough to win the league. And I know that people are going to say, you're only saying that because it's Liverpool. But yes, but that's because I watch a lot of Liverpool. And one thing that I'm going to say at the moment is that the mentality appears to have returned. And I think that's a really important point in terms of being able to sustain good form over a course of a long season with other competitions that we're all going to be involved in. It's that mentality when you're tired, when inspiration is low, when you know that you've got to go away and do it. Another team who've had a whole week to plan and are desperate to come at you. If you can still win away in those situations, you'll be all right. And so far, we've been okay. You look at Man City, they've gone behind 3 times. They've only won 1 of those games, and that was against Wickham. Liverpool have gone behind 3 times. We haven't lost a game yet. we have that mentality back to say that whatever happens, when someone hits us with a punch, we can take it, roll, and hit them back. And that's the Liverpool that wins championships. And I see us back there now.
Bold shout there, Mo. Mo, would you agree? Obviously, City, Liverpool involved.
Yeah, no, look, it's hard to argue with that. I still think Chelsea are going to win the league, although they rocked my faith a little bit against Juve. Not against City so much, because, again, City can beat anybody. And they just got outplayed. But I think Chelsea will still win the league. I think their squad is too powerful and they will just roll over too many teams. Whereas I do think Liverpool will drop points against teams they shouldn't do. And I think City definitely will drop points because I think City didn't sign a goal scorer. And I just think over the course of a season, that's going to cost them. I actually agree with Mo in that I think Liverpool will finish above City. I just think City didn't sign a goal scorer and that's just such a problem for them. It's going to be such a problem for them over the course of the whole season. But I don't think Liverpool win the league. I think Liverpool finish second, City will finish third, and I think Chelsea will win the league because I just think... I mean, I haven't seen anything against City that made me disbelieve in Chelsea. A bit worrying against Juventus, but at the same time, Lukaku should have got a hat-trick. So they should have walked away with a 3-1 win in Turin. So, you know, I think Chelsea are going to win the league, but I think Liverpool will finish second. I do think they'll finish above City. City, you needed to sign Kane, man. Just pay the extra 20 million and get your guy. Honestly, if you're paying 120, what's 150? Like, we know the owners don't need the money. Just get your guy because Pep's leaving pocket in 2 years. You know, what are you wasting a year for? I mean, it is literally pocket change to them. And Kane is exactly what this team needs. Yep. A false nine, a striker that can play false nine, but still score goals.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Gents, we're going to call it there for the Squawker Talker podcast. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast in the build-up to the game, this is the perfect prep for you. You can see yourself sitting in the pub watching the match, and when James Milner boots Jack Grealish up in the air, you can turn to your friend and say, I heard Mo Butt say that on the Squawker Talker podcast. So we've got you covered. We've got you covered on every single possible angle. But we're going to call it there for today. Mo and Mo, thanks so much for your time as always.
My pleasure.
No worries. Looking forward to it.
Indeed, indeed. Great stuff, guys. And as always, on the Squawker Talker podcast, we are here every week. If you give the subscribe button a quick click, you can get a brand new episode every single week. We look forward to speaking to you again very, very soon.